Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time to talk about the offense from that loss to the Browns. Obviously, the offense, a decent game, but certainly was not unculpable in the loss. Joining me to talk about it is Kevin Ostreicher. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Ken. Appreciate you having me. Yeah, for the offense, at least it was better than the defense is what I'll say about that.
That was a very tough show, I'll tell you. And Denard Melton that was on for the defense. If you haven't listened to it, please give it a listen. A lot of talk about what the Ravens potentially need to do going forward. Needs it IDL, needs it safety. An interesting thing, you know, we discussed, and it was kind of a precursor today in a way, was whether this is a year, given where the Ravens are on the offensive line, on the defensive side of the ball, that the Ravens should really be going all in. They certainly have a superstar quarterback. They have an offense that's very good. But do they have enough talent on the offensive line and at the, on the defense in particular, with the injuries they had to the defensive line and the problems, I'll just say, in the secondary, that this is a year you go all in? What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have the option to, and I think you should take it if you're the Ravens. I mean, one of the big things that I've been talking about is you're actually pretty well positioned right now if you're the Ravens, because it's not like they have to operate from a sense of desperation, but you should certainly operate with a sense of almost urgency in the fact that there are clear problems that you can identify, and you have the draft capital to do it this season, where I don't know about you, Ken, but 11 draft picks, the thought of 11 draft picks coming into this roster just doesn't seem very realistic to me that they would all make the 53. It's certainly important for the Ravens to hit on those mid to low level draft picks because of the cap situation, Lamar's big deal. But if you have to sacrifice a pick or two to get a win now type of player for a year where they're clearly good enough on offense that they can just figure out the defense, their top contenders, I would certainly try to make a move there. And plus, with the move that we'll talk about, the Ravens still have 11 draft picks that their number did not go up or down.
So let's say this is how I framed up the question for Denard last night, is you have three options. You probably have more than that because you could be a seller. Okay. If you really thought the situation was bad enough, but we're going to throw that one out. You can basically do nothing, write it out with who you have. You have Lamar Jackson, you know you're going to contend. And by the way, the acquisition today of Deontay Johnson would probably fit in the do-nothing category. It's an almost nothing burger of a deal in terms of cost, but also probably in terms of upside. It's cheap insurance to take out with him. So, but then another possibility is you go cheap. And so you go out and find maybe an edge rusher or maybe an IDL who you can get inexpensively. And one name that I love out there is Calais Campbell.
Yes.
To try and pick up that can help you to shore up your interior problems, but it's a temporary fix. It's not a long-term fix that you're trying to go for. And then maybe also go out and get a safety. And there are guys like Marcus May, like Quandre Diggs that are still out there who'd be a possibility. But anyway, you have to give up a little bit for those guys, but it's not it doesn't completely change what your picture is. Or you can really break the bank and go out and try and get an edge rusher, make some sort of mega deal for Max Crosby or another guy or an interior lineman who might really exactly fit your needs, or a safety who might exactly fit your needs, who is a multi-year guy. Which of those levels do you fit into?
I'm probably in the middle between go all in and, you know, do something, but not nothing. Some guys that I feel like could make a little sense for the Ravens, you know, especially watching Monday night, I think Aziz Ojulari could be a name on the edge that could make some sense for Baltimore. And while he would probably cost more than, you know, what the Ravens got Deontay Johnson for, I think that'd be worthwhile. It's interesting because if you want to do like a break the bank move, I'm not sure how realistic it is that the Jets move off of him, but Quinnen Williams is an interesting name to me. Now that contract obviously is something you probably have to work through, but like that's like the interior. Calais would be to do the Dolphins even just cut him and let him go somewhere. And could the Ravens scoop him up, or would you throw a conditional late round pick to Miami and say, hey, can we have him back? But I think that they need to do something, but it just feels like the big dream options, like obviously for Myles Garrett, there's no way the Browns trade him, let alone in division. And for Max Crosby, you know, the Raiders can say what they want. Max Crosby can say what he wants. The right price would probably pry him, but what is that right price? Is a multiple first round draft? If a first is involved, you know, it's no dice for the Raiders.
No deal. Yeah.
So yep. I think that somewhere in the middle there, like for safety with Javon Holland, who I think is a free agent after the season, but he's a versatile piece. Could he be someone that fits in because they need something there? So somewhere in the middle, maybe Aziz Ojulari, Javon Holland would be like my dream defensive trade deadline.
Yeah, Holland is a young guy at least, and Holland is a guy who could be signed for after this year, but it's who is up for potential signing this offseason that basically prevents me from wanting to go all in on a move for a pass rusher, even a big defensive line. If they get Aaron Donald, whoever the equivalent would be, I don't think I'd want to do it. It's too much contract to take on, and then you have to figure out all your third year guys, and that includes Likely and Linderbaum and Travis Jones, Adafi Owe, who's after actually his fourth year, but he's about to enter a fifth year option. You have to do a whole bunch of other restructuring. You'd have to figure out probably how to extend Marlon Humphrey, which by the way, does look like a potential place to save cap next year. Then you got to figure out if you still have room for Ronnie Stanley. I don't think they can take on a big contract. Their internal players are too important and they have too much divisible benefit on the table to potentially gain from those signings. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't go for any kind of mega deal. The other problem is that the Ravens' problems on defense may be too large to overcome. Even if they make a couple moves, you know, the injury situation right now, the defensive line is dire.
Yeah.
And that safety, obviously very dire as well.
Right. And that's the thing where when I look at trades, Ken, usually when I look at them is this a needle moving move for the Ravens? You know, is this something that is worth their while, or is it just taking away snaps from somebody and you give up a pick just to give it up and that's not really worth it? With the Deontay trade, it's like there are ways that he can work and there are ways that he can fit in. He's better than Nelson Aguilar, so at least you feel a little bit better in their depth if someone has to miss a little bit of time, as opposed to Nelson being that guy, Deontay can now slot in there. But if it's just like a Band-Aid that's going to rip before the playoffs start, if you acquire a low-level defensive lineman, a low-level cornerback, is that worth giving up the draft capital for when we know that in the draft, Eric DaCosta loves to package picks and move up and down and accumulate and spend his draft capital? So I think, look, this Ravens roster is talented enough to win, but obviously there are deep-rooted issues, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that they need to fix. And like you said, how realistic is it that they can fix those? Because we're now, you know, once week 9 is done, Ken, we're more than halfway through the season. And a lot of these things are trends already, where the first month of the year, you can say, okay, well, you know, this is an early thing. Maybe they can fix it. We're past that point. We're done with that. We are now in the category of, well, this is just what this defense is. So, sure, they can shore some things up, but some of those deep-rooted issues might not come up until the offseason.
Right. And it's one of the reasons why whatever moves they want, I want them to directly address the problem. So the defensive line, because it has holes in it right now, that's why I'm okay acquiring a nose tackle who can legitimately stop the run, maybe provide a little bit of pocket compression at least. Calais Campbell, I think fits the need fairly directly. I think any safety who can play the back end, and my standards have gone down now because the Ravens, are not at a point where they can be as picky as they were before. Right. I want a free safety for sure. I do want a free safety. I think they directly addresses the thing, but I'm not sure that they can limit it to just that. But the problem is with our picking an edge rusher, they've got two viable edge rushers right now. Are they the absolute top? No, but they are. And even though Van Noy's having a great year, I have to put him in the no category. Owe is a good pass rusher. He's young. The Ravens have him for another year. There are a whole bunch of people who think he's a bust. Those guys are full of shit. Basically, the people who are willing to utter those words that he's a bust. He's a very good player, yeah. but the fact of the matter is that picking up another edge rusher, if you're talking about just replacing the snaps of Ajabo and Ngakoue, well, that's fine, but that's also not that exciting. It's not as big a deep hole as it otherwise would be. And you're probably, if you're talking about picking up a pass rusher, you're probably not talking about picking up a guy for first down who you want out there for the early downs. Maybe it works out. Maybe you make Owe play more early downs and that works out. But I don't see the real gain. And the other thing is that the roster is stacked with outside linebackers right now. And now you got to think about who you get rid of. So does Ajabo go in a trade for Clowney? I don't have a problem with that, by the way, directly. As a one-for-one deal, I don't have a problem with it. But I'm not excited by that trade.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be, if they acquire someone and there's no edge rusher sent out, it would be 7, I believe, on the active roster with Van Noy, Owe, Ajabo, Robinson, Isaac, Ngakoue, and then whoever that 7th guy would be.
You didn't even say Harrison, did you?
No, Harrison. Yep. So 8 technically. So that's even 5 is like the, okay, you going with 5, 6 is kind of pushing it. 8 is just way too many. Yeah. So at that point, you would either have, like, do you stash Isaac on IR? Do you?
That's a possibility.
I don't think you move off of Ngakoue. He's been providing you with stuff. Like, I don't think you do that. So if they get an edge rusher, it would have to be, for a needle mover. You don't want to have somebody that slots in, like, 4th on your depth chart, because that doesn't help anything. It maybe gets you 1 extra sack, but that doesn't do anything in the grand scheme of things. But in reality, depending on what happens with Michael Pierce and Brent Urban, who are guys we know are already down, they need someone on the interior who can push the pocket, because, you know, even with blitzing, their pass rushers is not getting home. And this is a problem, Ken, that we've talked about for years with this Ravens team, kind of went away last year, but getting pressure with 4 has been troublesome at points for the Ravens this season, which they need to shore up, because that's part of what made their 2023 defense so good, was Nnamdi Madubuike would win so hard. Jadeveon Clowney would win so hard. They'd get in the backfield within 2 seconds and that would be it.
So I want to look at the 4-man pass rush this year here, just to see how bad it's been, because the overall, you know, sack, the overall number of sacks is not bad at all.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 4th in the NFL in sacks right now. They've had 15 sacks with 4 men, 6.1% sack rate. And they've had 7 on 60 plays with a 5-man rush. So that's pretty good. A 7.2% overall sack rate is solid. I think they're about 14th in the league, something like that. They might be 13th, but they're in the middle of the pack. And I understand in terms of a per snap basis that people want to see more pass rush. They just watched a game where Jameis Winston had averaged over 4 seconds to throw. That's going to piss anybody off. But, you know, there's a number of circumstances coming together. One is the Ravens just had a really bad loss. Number two is they lost to the freaking Browns. You know, then of course they let a quarterback who hardly ever plays, has tons of unforced errors, have all day to throw in the pocket. He committed a number of additional unforced errors, which they didn't capitalize on. And people are screaming, because that's what sports fans do when their team loses. And I get that. I just don't want to overreact to this. And I want to have the solution address the problems directly. And right now, that problem on Sunday was that Travis Jones wasn't himself and couldn't initiate that pass rush from the inside by commanding doubles play after play. And you watch him. He's not pushing off that foot at all. He's just kind of slapping with his arms at the guys in front of him. He looked terrible. He didn't look anything like Travis Jones. And that means Madubuike is not as good. Plus, Madubuike had to play every snap, 42 out of 44 of the last 44 snaps he had to play. The total interior defensive line got 0 pressures after the Pierce injury. So you had Urban injury, Pierce injury, and then 0 pressures from the entire interior defensive line on 31 pass rush snaps.
Yeah, it's not good. And again, Travis Jones, that Ravens bye super late. You know, they can hold him out of practice and they can kind of heal him up as best as he can, but he's kind of playing on that unless they do decide to hold him out completely and let it heal. But again, they really can't afford to do that right now. But if this, at the end of the day, I mean, you might have to because he's not giving you much when he's in.
Right. I don't think you can have him on a team if you knew he was just hurt again. Yeah. I think you have to bring up Josh Tupou, acquire somebody else, and you might even have to also bring up Wormley to the roster. Now, we haven't heard anything about Wormley from the Ravens. My guess is they can't be happy with him, or they'd have had him active for some of these other games, including this last one.
Yeah.
Where it would have made sense. But let's get back to the Deontay Johnson move for a second, because that directly addresses the offense. You know, he's been not a particularly good player for a significant amount of time now. 6.2 yards per target this year with a terrible Panthers offense, admittedly, and 6.8 career, which is also bad. Admittedly, some bad quarterback play there from the Steelers guys, the aging Ben Roethlisberger and whatnot. But, you know, it's not a really exciting pick unless you think he can do things versus man coverage that you can't otherwise get, or that you get some value from his ancillary abilities. And that's where do you see the Ravens using him?
I feel like there are a couple of different ways that they can. I mean, again, he's a guy that you can slot in terms of just actual wide receiver depth. I don't think Baltimore felt particularly confident in their guys behind Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman. I mean, if one of those guys were to go down, you're sliding Nelson Agholor as your two. And then obviously we've seen guys like Tylan Wallace rotate in there. We haven't really seen a bunch of Tez Walker this season. And while Deontay is not the prototypical wide receiver that I would have gone after, like skill set wise, Deontay's 5'10", right? He's known for the route running and all of that. My dream build is a guy like Cortland Sutton. Obviously, I don't think Denver's moving off of him after the year that they've had so far, but kind of that bigger bodied player that when they drafted Tez Walker, we had talked about, okay, well, this is a guy with speed and has the bigger body, but they're not using him. But with Deontay, it essentially was a free move. And he's someone that it's going to be interesting to see the personnel groupings they use, Ken, because obviously, do they want to shift more to three receiver sets, or do they want to use him in two receiver sets, take someone off the field and go heavy? They're going to use him, and it's probably going to eat into Bateman snatcher a little bit, probably eat into Flowers a tad bit less than that. But to me, it's a low risk move. I'm not necessarily sure there's like high reward that can happen, but if anything, they're not really paying a lot of the salary either. Carolina's going to be on the hook for the majority. So it's about $600,000+. They're on the
cost,
hook for.
Cost is nothing. We're in agreement on that.
Nothing. So to me, I think that it's a fine start. But as we talked about, I think that they need to do more on defense.
Okay. So we'll talk about snapshare in a second, because I think there are two elements of value that they think they can get out of Johnson. The first is as a return man. And sure. And maybe this means Deontay Hardy is gone for the year. Maybe they know more about what his situation is. If he is, fine. Then they needed somebody. Getting Deontay for this kind of a price is a reasonable way to address even just that. I don't even have a problem with the cost for just that. But then I think what the best argument I've heard today for getting him was that he would take some gadgetry away from Flowers. Now, Flowers just coming off his best game in terms of ADOT, 17.3 average yards per target, and it was on 12 targets. It's not a small sample. Yeah. Okay. So over 200 yards in the air that Jackson threw him the ball in this game. You know, that's what the Ravens really want out of Flowers, is a guy who can stretch the defense and make them commit additional resources to him that they will regret via various schematic things they can have. Anytime they overload a particular area of the field where Flowers is adjacent, that other player will have a big advantage. And that's, you know, watch any of these videos that are out there on the internet on how complementary routes work between two receivers, and you'll see it's all concepts to basically force back rear defenders into bad choices about who they need to assist on, and then take advantage of the man coverage opportunity that is left behind. That he can, you know, Flowers can really drive additional value with, and they're using him for a ton of gadget right now. So I think using Deontay Johnson as a gadget player, which also might be some injury risk there too, is a nice thing to take off Flowers' plate.
Yeah, and I think that Todd Monken has been better than he was at the start of last year with that, but still a lot for Zay. Yeah. And I think if you can put Zay in even more optimal situations, and Deontay's a guy that I think can excel in that role, because again, you're not just going to throw anybody back there and say, all right, take it away from Zay. Deontay does have that to him. So I like that idea, because with Zay, he's at his best when he is stressing a defense and when teams have to worry about him. And as you talked about, other guys can benefit from that. And so I like that idea, since with Zay, teams already know they have to shade help over to his side in a lot of different situations, or else one-on-one, he will just burn you with his route running. And so for a guy like Deontay Johnson, who also has that route running ability, I think that that can help. But on top of that, with the gadget plays, that could be a really good role to use him in.
It'd be interesting to see how they use him. Hopefully this is something where, you know, the best situation for Deontay Johnson is maybe he plays way less than anybody expected him to on offense. 200 snaps the rest of the way. Aguilar has 260 currently. So if he were to play 200 the rest of the way, I think it could be a really good thing for the Ravens, because it means Bateman and Flowers are not hurt. That's the most important thing of all, is that those guys are still healthy. It means they're probably running the football effectively, because he doesn't just compete for snaps with those two. He can, or with Aguilar even as a third receiver, competes with you know, heavier personnel packages, 12, 21, and 22, and he'd be out on those. You know, you wouldn't figure him to be in there. You want a bigger bodied blocking wide receiver like an Aguilar or even like a Bateman to do that. But it's just, I think, you know, there's so much competition already. If you look at the tight end room, those four guys basically getting real close to 2.0 snaps per game. Now they're just down a little bit last game because the game script didn't allow for it. We'll get into some of that later. But I don't see a ton of snaps obvious for Deontay Johnson unless someone gets hurt.
Right. You don't want to have this trade take away a lot of the identity that Baltimore has used to get to this point. So if you're sacrificing your heavier sets for three wide receiver sets, I don't think that's the way to go. I think you can use Deontay Johnson in a lot of different ways without sacrificing that. And yes, you're right. You know, Deontay Johnson is not a blocker. You don't want him out there blocking on plays. But to me, I think that he has ability, especially because we know Lamar spreads the ball around a lot more, and he has made that decision this season, and I think it's paid off greatly for them. Because in the past, I think there'd be a lot of conversation, there still will be, about Deontay Johnson, a guy who has had, you know, there have been effort issues, and, you know, he's been discontent in a couple situations, him coming to a Ravens offense, and all of a sudden, you know, he's not getting all these targets, he's not getting all these yards. But we see a shift in that passing game this season. So again, he's going from Carolina, which is just, again, dismal, to a Ravens offense. And again, you mentioned it a couple minutes ago, Cam, with the quarterback play he's had going from that over the course of his career to a Lamar Jackson, he should benefit from that. But I don't think this is a move where all of a sudden Deontay Johnson comes in and plays 500 snaps. Like, I'm with you, because there are a lot of different packages that he can be used in, but you don't want to sacrifice what has got you to this point just to incorporate Deontay Johnson. You want to use him as a complementary piece, not a focal point of an offense, obviously.
Right. I'm with you entirely. So you put me down for about, you know, 25 snaps probably be optimal. If the Ravens are trailing, they have more negative game scripts, maybe he gets up to 30, 31 snaps per game. But I if it's more than that, boy, I wouldn't be really excited about it. Not excited about it at all. But anyway, let's talk about the offense from this game, because we really need to get to that. The defense took a lot of the blame for the loss. I think rightly so. They certainly dropped a number of opportunities literally to win the game. But the offense played a part. Jackson had the miss throw to Flowers that would have been a touchdown. I think they ended up getting 3 points on that drive, but that was a miss. You had the missed field goal by Tucker, not technically on the offense, but the offense did, of course, put them in a position where they're kicking a field goal instead of scoring. The choice to direct snap the ball to Henry on fourth and one was unbelievable. And I know that the town is in love with Monken, but don't think for a moment this isn't 100% Monken's call. And it's not something Harbaugh should have said, time out, or told him, no, I'm overruling you on that play, as I've heard some people say. Why didn't Harbaugh overrule him? Look, you can talk to the guy after the fact, but you don't have enough time to overrule him. Not without calling, you know, timeout right then and decide to do it. And if you do, you're using up a currency with that coordinator that effectively neuters him to a certain degree with his own player and in terms of what he can do in his own mind. It is a bad idea. It's Monken's mistake. That's who owns it this time. Monken's got a lot of currency in the bank with having a good year in terms of all sorts of scripted plays and everything, but is there any other way you can frame that up?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there. And it kind of reminds me, honestly, Ken, it's happened even this year, too, with the opinions on Zach Orr. But I remember going with, you know, back in the Greg Roman days, everybody wanted Greg Roman demoted. And they said, why don't the Ravens demote Greg Roman? Why don't they demote him to run game coordinator, bring somebody else in? It's been that same tune with Zach Orr. Why don't they demote Zach Orr and promote somebody else, bring somebody else in? They'll just leave at that point. Like, they're not staying in the organization. And that sends a terrible message to future guys you want to bring in. It reflects poorly on you as an organization. And so when we're talking about this situation with Todd Monken, you know, you want to give your guy free reign. I get that, you know, it all comes back to the head coach and that, like all that stuff. But in this situation, Todd Monken is the play caller. John Harbaugh is not the play caller. And so, you know, you have a situation, you get to the line with 25, 20 seconds on that play clock. You're right. That's not enough time to say, okay, well, this. And then on top of it, Todd Monken had like three or four plays like this where you could all say, you know, the Charlie Cole play on third and one, where they put him under center and they could have just picked up an easy first down with Lamar and Derrick Henry. It falls on Todd Monken. That is Todd Monken's thing that he has to bear the brunt of. And I'm sure he'll take accountability for it on Thursday, at least I would assume. But we have kind of seen this with this Ravens offense at times where Todd Monken will get too cute with things. And again, like, I know that John Harbaugh has his faults. Everybody does. Everybody has their faults. But this is not on him. It's on just a weird coordinator game, Ken, on Sunday.
Yep. All right. Very good. The Bateman drop we'll talk about later. Obviously, another one for the offense there. The Browns really continued with a game of stuffing the box here, and they didn't do it to as extreme a degree as Tampa did, which is about the most extreme I've ever seen done in a game. The Tampa played 4.15 defensive backs per play the entire game. That essentially they stayed in base defense for the entire game, including every down and distance. And it's just so weird. I don't even know how to respond to it in terms of how they did it. But the Browns, you know, basically, if you looked at game script, go back, and I challenge anyone to do this. Go back. If you want to find more than 11 carries for Derrick Henry, go back and look at the plays play by play. Pause the video at the snap and see how many people are in the box. I'm not talking about the slot corner, but I'm talking about the set pieces and any safety that's crept up or whatever it might be. But count the number of players in the box. If there were seven there and the Ravens only have, a tight end and Henry, it doesn't necessarily create a good run opportunity. You can do it, but it doesn't create a great run opportunity. Look at the number of times they had six. It's very few on potential running downs. They did some on passing downs where they had only six in the box, but then, you know, that's the nature of that. You're if you have 8 or 9 or 10 yards to go on third down, you're not going to run Derrick Henry, it's very hard to find additional plays where they could have run it. And I'm sure if you did it, you could find four plays or some such, but the Ravens are going to the line of scrimmage with multiple calls. They can check into a run at any time they want. If it's appropriate, they do it. And I don't think Lamar has any kind of fear or aversion to it. Cause a lot of them end up in his own runs anyway that are, you know, taking control of the game. To me, I think they ran what the game script allowed and what the Browns presented to them to do.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what teams we've been accustomed to seeing is they understand the threat of the run game, the threat of Derrick Henry, and they will stack. And so that's where everybody says, okay, we'll then work the play action game off of that. Obviously, have those guys creep up and have them bite on that fake. And then if they're bringing guys and they're sending a blitz, all right, then you have Zay working one-on-one. You have Rashad working one-on-one. You can plop the ball over the linebacker's head, do a tight end running across the middle or running up the seam. It's all of that. But we've had a couple of these games where, you know, Derrick Henry, what, he had 13 in the Chiefs game in week one, if I'm not mistaken. He had 11 in this game. I think his carries have decreased every week over the last three. But there's so much more nuance to it. Whereas you're right. You know, you could probably find 4 to 5 plays in the game where you could argue, okay, Derrick Henry could have had 15 or 16 or 17 carries if you really like worked hard to find it. But the way that this game went, the Ravens it was a back and forth game. They're trying to come back in it. What I did notice is Henry was in for more late game than we were accustomed to seeing, I believe, where usually they'll use Justice Hill in that mode, and Justice has certainly earned that. But they had Derrick on the field for some of those snaps. They haven't used him a ton as a receiver this season. Obviously, they've done it a bit. But to me, I'm not overly upset about 11 carries to Derrick Henry. Sure, I wish he hit that 15 mark, but if you're Baltimore, you're not trying to force that, especially when you're right. If you're outmatched in the box, it's not going to end well for you. And you're putting yourself already, they had a lot of second and long situations to start. You're just putting yourself in an even worse spot if you're trying to run on second and long, and then you're in third and 10 and you're like, all right, you know, now you got to hit a big play.
Yeah. Anyway, I think lots of good reasons why what they're doing a very good job, I would say, in general, of responding to what's shown. And I've got to assume that a lot of that is Lamar at the line of scrimmage, that they're going with two plays. I see Lamar doing this thing. I've commented a couple times on the show about him walking around pre-snap and making sure that the pass blocking assignments are right. Some of that is just for the benefit of the offensive line, but they can probably figure it out themselves. Even you know, not completely continuous offensive line can still figure it out themselves. But Lamar is also talking through that play kind of in his own mind. And he's trying to figure out, where am I going to go with the ball? What am I doing? Where am I expecting the pressure to come from? That's good. I really like that. And he's obviously, he's having a great year that's shown from this. And even with, as we'll get to, a tremendous pressure reign of terror against him in this game, still did very well with it.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I've loved to see, honestly, the development since Todd Monken has come in is, and they've been very vocal about this, Lamar has the keys. Lamar is going up the line. He's checking in and out of things. He's seeing the defense. He could always do this, but he just didn't have as much freedom in Greg Roman's system, where John Harbaugh, Todd Monken made it a point to be able to give him the keys of this offense. And he has been a much more confident player, I think. Not that he wasn't before, but I just think he has the confidence now. It's like, all right, well, now everybody believes. He never didn't believe in himself, but he's checking at the line. He's spreading the ball around. He's seeing stuff as it happens. He's been, I don't know, Ken, to me, this is like every time there's pressure on Lamar, I always automatically assume he's getting out of it some way, somehow, because we've seen so many of those plays this season. It seems like even more than ever, which is crazy because he's had so many over the course of his career. There are certainly a couple of throws he'd like to have back, and I'm sure we'll get a little more into that. But again, this was, if you're talking about the reasons the Ravens lost this game, Lamar Jackson is so far down on that totem pole, that sure, he made a couple mistakes and had a couple things that, you know, could have maybe won or put them in a better position to win the game. But we are talking about like all the way down on the totem pole is Lamar Jackson in terms of reasons Baltimore lost.
So many times, completely agree, by the way. So many times in this game, you see him under pressure at one moment, then he jukes somebody, and all of a sudden he has another 2 seconds to stroll out towards that right sideline and make a throw back across his body to the middle of the field. Absolutely fearless in that regard. And so I'm not saying all those worked out. In fact, you know, the Bateman drop and a couple of the play throws at the end of the game were in that group that weren't complete, he's incredible at finding peace and seeing the field well through that kind of pressure. And another remarkable game for that. Let's jump on to some other topics here. This is a game where special teams was more of a factor than it had been. Their punts, not talking really about the kicking game specifically, although that did matter. Their kick bounced off the upright and through. Ours did not, and that was a difference in the ball game. Ours missed wide left. But in terms of the kickoffs, two of the five kickoffs were in the end zone for the Ravens. And only one of seven for the Browns was not returned. So six of the seven were returned. They were either in the landing zone or two of them were in the end zone, and Harbaugh is pissed off because Collier returned them.
Yep.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
By the way, pretty obvious to me that the Browns are going after Collier in this game. They're kicking it towards his side, time after time. It does continue to bring up the question of, do they need everybody that they've got on special teams, or could they make do with one less player and play somebody else on special teams who maybe is not ideally suited by body type to it, but would be adaptable. And whether it's on, you have the short field for kickoffs now, could you have a bigger guy, a defensive lineman or something that you use on a kick coverage team? Or could you have a defensive lineman that you use on a kick return team? Of course, defensive lineman in this game, not probably the best answer, but I do think there are other players who could get you through that snap and try and help you, not carry that last marginal player on the roster who's hurting you. Another player, why the hell isn't Marcus Williams playing special teams in a game like this? Like, if Marcus Williams played special teams before, you want to penalize a guy? Put him out there in freaking special teams. But don't have him sitting on a treadmill, a bike on the sideline. I don't know what he was actually doing. But, obviously he was active for the game. You got every right to ask him to do something different for a game if you're pissed off about his performance, or what I think is probably some other internal issue / discussion that they won't talk about. Because I think if it was just play, I think they would say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whenever you hear the words, we're keeping this internal, we're keeping it in-house, that it's not good, whatever it is. Yeah. So I don't know what that situation is. But, I mean, at the very least, make them inactive and call someone up who can play special teams.
You could do that, too.
Like, again, it felt like you're punishing a guy, and at the end of the day, you lost. And obviously, it's in hindsight, but, could – one of these bad plays that happened on special teams, could a guy who actually played special teams come up and done a better job? I'm sure we could ask ourselves that question 10 times out of 10, but it's so tough because for special teams, we've seen a decent drop off over the last couple of seasons, just in terms of execution on multiple fronts, whether it be kickoff coverages. Obviously, Justin Tucker had his struggles from 50 last year and this year as well, missed another kick. And actually spoke to Nick Moore on the Ryan Ripken show, the long snapper. And he said that the Ravens, usually there are three kicking balls designed to be used in a game, and they each have a microchip in the ball.
Is that what was loose?
And it was the microchip that was loose in the ball on the first ball and the second ball. Both came loose. So they had to use the third designated kicking ball, which they had never played with before. And I think Nick said that was the only time he's ever had to go to the last kicking ball to be used. And so maybe that had something to do with it. But you saw they were shaking the ball and seeing what was loose.
It was weird. Yeah, I thought it was maybe an inflation needle or something that they because that's if you're blowing up your own ball as a kid, you think that's the kind of thing that could somehow get on the inside. But that makes a lot of sense.
He said it was the microchip, and they were trying to figure out what it was, and the whole team was shaking the ball around. So obviously they have guys that work with the balls to get them ready for the game, and I think Nick said they have two guys or something, and so. That was one of the big things of the special teams unit had to deal with that throughout the game. But this is not a one-off thing with the special teams group. There were penalties that pushed them back throughout. And one thing that you mentioned is defensive lineman on the new kickoff team. The Browns, I think, used Mike Hall on a couple special teams plays.
Oh, did they?
Their defensive lineman, number 57. I think if I'm not mistaken, he made a tackle on one of those kickoffs. So I would be curious. I mean, again, the defensive lineman in this game, probably not, but could the Ravens go out there and get a bigger player that they could play on special teams? Because it's just so different with the dynamic kickoff now compared to what it was.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely a much shorter field. I'll give you one other reason why it might make a lot of sense. And this is not something that I think would go over really well, particularly potentially with Marcus Williams too, who will probably be looking for a new contract somewhere else next year. And it's just practicality. I'm not kicking him out the door or anything, but the Ravens save $5.3 million if they let him go.
Yeah.
But if the Ravens, if he were to get hurt playing special teams and he had to be put on IR, then the Ravens would actually have a refund due from their insurance policy on his contract, which would reduce the cap on him.
Interesting.
So that would be a very significant thing. So they are incented actually in a perverse way to use him on special teams if they're going to have him active anyway. If you're going to have him inactive, I guess, you know, that's another way to handle it. But they should have had him out there on special teams. It would have made all kinds of sense.
Yeah.
And if his answer is, I haven't played special teams at all, you know, the response is, do you want to get back on defense?
Yeah. They need something. I mean, between him, Eddie Jackson, it's just, we talked about it. They need something there. But I remember the days when, you know, they had Marlon and Matt Judon out there on special teams. And those were like, they were playing like first team reps. Like they were good players at that time. You want to get a guy out there, put the guy on special teams.
Marlon last year got hurt on special teams on the field goal block unit.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's ancient history either, is the unfortunate thing. We'll keep moving on here. Ravens face a defense with two very powerful edge rushers. And this is the most extreme case. Obviously, when you're facing Myles Garrett, that's usually true. But Za'Darius Smith also played, I thought, very well in this game. And they continually pressured Jackson. One of the things that led to was a whole lot of set and chip blocking at an unusual level. Now they threw the ball 39 times. Okay. Let me be clarified on that. They threw plus were sacked 39 total times, resulting in a passer sack. 31 set and chip blockers in total were used, which is very high for that amount. That's 0.79 per play. So that actually cut into their available routes. And even when you chip block, it really limits the routes you can do. But they had a number of set blockers in there as well. I think it was 16 and 15. But they had to do it against this group, and it still really didn't work out. They still got a ton of pressure on Jackson, despite that huge incremental commitment of resources.
Right. And I think we've definitely seen an improvement on this offensive line since the first couple of weeks of the season. There's no doubt about that. But I think what this shows is, again, when there's a vaunted pass rush like this and you have Myles Garrett, Za'Darius Smith, Okoronkwo got involved on the interior, they have guys like Shelby Harris and Mike Hall and all those guys, you know, they struggled. You know, Daniel Falele, I thought he had shown strides, but had a rough one in this one.
Game. Yep.
And, you know, it seemed like for this group, you look ahead to like a Pittsburgh in their pass rush. What is that going to look like? And in this game, Lamar was able to escape a lot. I think, again, he just has that uncanny ability. And honestly, that makes the offensive line look a lot better in a lot of ways than it probably is. But that's just the Lamar effect. And it's different blocking for him than it is blocking for any other quarterback in the league. But it didn't necessarily shock me that Baltimore's offensive line didn't have the performance we were used to, at least over the last month or so in this one, because those are big, strong, physical guys they have on that line. And it's a unique unit. It's a unique unit over there in Cleveland. So I think, you know, disappointing, but for me, pretty expected.
Yeah, they definitely have a lot of defensive players who match up well with the Ravens. And JOK is a guy, he got hurt during the game. They also lost Denzel Ward during the game. They lost Emerson, at least briefly during the game. So they were having their own problems in the secondary, you know, keeping their guys on the field. But it was a tough game. I want to talk about the Ravens receivers here a little bit. I thought they came through with good separation versus man coverage as they needed to. They did have some big drops in this game. Extended plays looked pretty good in terms of how they were run. I'd say most notably that 50-yarder that was dropped by Bateman. But I look at Lamar, I don't think you can point to drops as being a reason why he's got only 115 passer rating or whatever he's got now for the year. His drop rate for his receivers this year is actually the lowest since he's got here. It's only 4.2%. It's been about 7% for his career. Yeah, 7% for his career. And it's been higher every other year that he's played, including, well, it was 7.2 in his MVP year, 8.4 in 21, 9.0 in 22. And it's never otherwise, other than this year, been lower than 5.4%. So, you know, the receivers are doing what they can for him. They've done a good job. And even though this was not a good game, in particular for Bateman, also, you know, to a degree for Aguilar, this has been a team that's been a set of receivers that's done well for him.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously, you're not going to love the results of this game. I know I certainly don't. Nobody does here in Baltimore. But Zay has gotten open at an alarmingly good rate this season. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been torching everyone that he lines up in front of, and teams have had to help over. Now, the game plan at the beginning of the season, especially, you know, when you talk about that Kansas City game in week one, they did everything they could to take Mark Andrews out of the game plan. Mm-hmm. And obviously now with Zay doing his thing, Rashad Bateman, again, rough game for him on Sunday, but overall he's done a very good job and has established himself as a trusted target for Lamar. And I think you see a lot of these guys trying to be able to not only establish connection as the year goes on, but with all these broken plays, you have to be able to be on some level of a wavelength with your quarterback to be able to know the spots that he wants you in, to be able to either work back to him or take your route up the field or whatever it is. And we saw that on a couple of plays, the Zay play where he did like a double-double move and then went up, and Lamar obviously, you know, they didn't connect on that touchdown that would have been. But then you have other plays where that Rashad Bateman play, Rashad worked his way open, Lamar just drifted out and found him. He didn't obviously catch the ball, but even on that last play of the game, you know, Lamar was drifting out to his right and then he like juked the guy out, pump faked, and then threw it. And obviously it wasn't a completion, but I think the receivers are doing a really good job this season of continuing to further their relationship with Lamar Jackson and just have a better understanding. And we know that Lamar, he coaches guys up. He's very communicative in terms of what he wants from his receivers. In this game, we saw a lot of that. But I just think obviously what's going to take precedent is the fact that, yeah, they dropped a lot of balls. And honestly, Ken, they were in a lot of big spots. Third down drops, you know, big play drops that could have shifted momentum and tide. I think the drops were so, they were of such magnitude. It's going to take the precedent over everything, which it should. But again, it doesn't wash away what the group has done this season.
Yeah. It was not a good day on third down, 2 of 10, 0 of 2 on fourth down. That's very bad on the high leverage plays. You want to look for another thing that the offense did not do well. That's it. We saw some of Lamar really trying to fit the ball into tight windows, particularly on third down. He's, in fact, very lucky not to have had a ball intercepted in this game. I thought he threw two-thirds as many interceptable balls maybe as Winston did in this game. I mean, it was a bad number for Winston, obviously, but the Ravens got fortunate that they didn't get picked in this game.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought the offense did do very well, the defense has been the best tackling team in the entire NFL all year, but the offense has been a great tackle breaking machine. Now, obviously you have Derrick Henry, you think that's a lot of it, but it's also all the shifty guys and what they're doing after the catch to have avoidance. Bateman has been good at that. Flowers has been outstanding. Lamar is always great at it. And it's not just about power. Justice Hill has been really good at this year, but they forced, I want to get this right, 16 missed tackles in this game among 70 tackle opportunities for the Browns. The Browns missed 23% of their tackles, while the Ravens missed 7. It's a little higher than normal, about 11%. Ravens are still under 10% for the year, which is the best in the entire NFL. And the Browns are 31st in tackling grade, is the best I can find. I don't have a tackles per attempt stat that's summed up for all of the teams at once.
Yeah, those are video game numbers. I mean, to force all those missed tackles. And I'll even give an example of the one that honestly I thought was the most impressive to me. They were down. I can't remember. I think it was second and goal or second and 10 from inside the 15. And Todd Monken got cute and did that little tight end pitch over to Isaiah Likely. And it was going to go for like a 5-yard loss. And Likely juked out like 2 or 3 guys. And I think either got back to the line or might even have gained a yard or
might
two.
Might have gained 2 yards or something. Yeah,
on that play. So it's been a really good thing this group has been able to do. And I don't know if you've noticed this, Ken. What I've kind of been seeing is these Ravens, when they're juking out guys, just trying to pick up yards, they will fall forward. Like they will snake their way into 1 or 2 extra yards on a lot of these plays. So you'll see juke, juke, and then like they see that obviously they're going to get tackled or hit. and they just kind of fall forward or dive forward for an extra yard or two. And that contributes, you know, might be pretty, you know, marginal in the actual moment, but it adds up a little bit. And I think it preserves their health. And I think that overall, it's something that this team has to do, where you're not necessarily putting your body at risk fighting for, again, like Lamar's rookie season, he would like take a massive hit for like half an extra yard.
Right.
We're not seeing that. He's been good at that since he started. But to me, the whole team is doing it now, and they're all picking up extra yards. They're all falling forward. And it's not like, I know there was a lot of a contention with Marquise Brown when he was here in Baltimore with, like, you know, he would give up and just kind of like
turtle.
Yeah, just kind of turtle and just go down. Guys are going down this season, but they're doing it not just to say, oh, I don't want the contact. It's, oh, let me go pick up a yard and also preserve my body and get the team an extra yard or two.
Yeah, now I've been very, very satisfied with how that's worked out. And I think it's one of the Ravens' real strength. Week after week, when we're looking at the matchup shows, and we've had several consecutive really terrible tackling teams that the Ravens have faced, Tampa Bay and Cleveland, that always seems to show up in what we're talking about. So it's something I look for. What I want to talk about also, they had 22 first downs in this game, and it was basically all driven by explosive plays. They didn't convert on third down, you know, two times the whole game. So they converted 20 times on first and second down. And that's something really exceptional. That means they're not having a lot of problem picking up a 10-yard first down when they need to, or a big play on second down that gets them to the sticks. It was effective from that stand. And, you know, offense, everybody, you know, understands that the Ravens offense is very good. They've averaged 24.3 first downs per game. It's by far the most in the National Football League. Tampa's something like 1.5 behind them. I might be wrong about that. Might be 0.5 behind them, but they're well behind. It's just been a very impressive offensive showing.
It has been. And the thing that I think I'm even most impressed with, or at least one of the things I'm most impressed with the Baltimore offense, is even when they get themselves in second and long situations, it feels like this year, more often than not, they're able to convert that than we've seen. I mean, again, you mentioned it. They were terrible on third down. They did not convert a fourth down, even though they tried. But we're seeing them, even when, let's say, Derrick Henry is stopped for a one-yard gain or no gain, or there's an incompletion on first down, it doesn't set them back as much as it used to. Where, obviously, if you have a poor offense or an offense that doesn't execute consistently, you get into a second and long situation, it's so much harder. I mean, it's basic math, right? It's so much harder to convert on that, as opposed to a second and four, second and three. We know how deadly the Ravens can be on second and third and short when they're not getting cute. But for this team, we're seeing, I think, more explosive plays. And part of that is the fact that Lamar's spreading the ball around and he's doing it himself a little bit as well. And I know that, again, there are some plays he'd like to have back, but towards the end of the game, he was putting the Superman cape on and doing everything he could to try to will this team to a victory. And I think when you saw the Ravens give up that touchdown to Cedric Tillman late, you're just like, man, it came down to the defense, when in reality, everybody wanted it to come down to the offense. They bleed the clock down. So it didn't come to that point, because the confidence level, obviously defensively, is just so low right now.
Right.
But offensively, Lamar had a great drive, and obviously Derrick Henry put that touchdown in there. But, you know, it's unfortunate. It was just too much time that they kept on the clock for the Cleveland offense.
I mean, they moved down the field and was 90 some yards. They moved down the field, right? And they, in lightning order. And it would have been wonderful if they could have found a way. We did have the question come up about, why did the clock stop on the play at about 2:40, where Zay Flowers almost made it to the pylon? I don't know for sure what the reason was, but I suspect that it was due to the officials wanting to check upstairs to see if he'd gotten in, and stopping the clock for that check. In which case, I'm not sure exactly how they restart the clock, but anyway, the Ravens got the advantage or the disadvantage, and it probably turned out to be neither, really, because they got a chance back at the ball again in terms of doing that. We almost had a game, by the way. The ball by Tillman was caught right at the goal line for the touchdown. So there wasn't an option for him to like go down in the field of play, but boy, if he'd have caught that ball at the five and not gone down in the field of play, it would have been a huge, huge error by the Browns. And that's exactly what Mooney did a couple of years ago for the Bears. They end up losing the game to the Ravens in overtime because of it. It would be that would have been cool. But I don't know what your reaction was. My reaction when Tillman scored that touchdown was, well, thank goodness he scored it quickly here. And I liked the fact that they were trying for that high variance play on defense to get after the quarterback.
Yeah, well, that's essentially, I think, one of the main reasons they did it is because essentially they were probably like, all right, we can't stop anything short and intermediate. We might as well try to send this pressure, either sack Jameis and push him far back, if not out of field goal range, or they get the touchdown and the offense gets the ball back with a shot to win the game. And I mean, I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. I mean, was it 59 seconds, I think, was how much time they scored that touchdown with. I mean, that's more than enough time, and the Ravens almost did it. I mean, Lamar drove them down the field. I think they got to the Cleveland 38 with like...
Oh, no, it was inside that. They were at it? The...
I can't even remember. Yeah, it was...
Okay, let's go for the last line of scrimmage. I thought it was inside the 30, maybe the 23 or something. Yeah, the last one is at Cleveland 24.
24, okay. So, yeah, they got in there, and they had like four shots to try to win the game. And, I mean, look, it didn't work out for them, but... When that happens and Cleveland scores, you're thinking, well, yeah, you don't want it to come down to the Ravens defense anyway, because you knew what was going to happen. Give Lamar the ball back and see what happens. That was their best shot to win the game. But you're right, where if that ball was caught at the 10-yard line, you know, Tillman's a young player, so who knows if he would have done it or not. It's his second season. But look, you just go down at the 7 and kick the game winning field goal, and that's it.
Right. Well, the Ravens have generally been pretty good at understanding the situation on the field, but they had a bad one in 2016. I don't need to go back into it. I've talked about that enough on the air here. Let's see. Points per drive. There's one thing I want to say about this offense. As great as it is, and it's a damn great offense, and the Henry Lamar mesh point is the single biggest weapon in the NFL right now, the single biggest offensive weapon, if you can call it one. But it is the single biggest weapon, I think.
Oh, yeah.
This offense is still not as good as the Ravens were in 2019. The points per drive are substantially different. So almost a quarter of a point per drive, 3.08 to 2.84. Most of that difference is due to the offensive line and the difference in the players there, because I think the receivers are clearly better now. The running back situation is better now. The tight end situation was good in both cases, so it's really hard to say if it was better then or better now. You could certainly make the case it was better now, but they had Hurst and Andrews back then who were effective weapons. They had Boyle, who was a blocker slash receiver. But that 2019 offense, don't put it down. And I don't have a lot of tolerance for people who want to badmouth Roman, because that offense was basically created for Lamar by Roman. It's built completely around him. I mean, in a lot of ways, Lamar owes Roman for the offense being so, and Harbaugh for that matter, for the offense being built around him the way it was. A lot of other coaches, they probably would have taken a half measure there and said, well, yes, this is good. Do this, this whole running thing you're up to. Do that sometimes, but a lot of times we just want you to stay in the pocket, make some throws and whatnot. And, you know, Lamar would have not thrived to the degree he did, certainly in 2019, if he hadn't had everything built just so for him.
Yeah, we know that, you know, the Ravens not only wanted, but they needed to be all in on Lamar. And if they had gone and kind of done it halfway, like you mentioned, or not, you know, done it the full way, we might be sitting here and Lamar's somewhere else, or, you know, Lamar's doing again, it just probably wouldn't have worked, because you have to go all in. The franchises don't do it enough. Right. It's not even a Lamar thing. It's like for everybody, build the offense around the guy and don't do it halfway. Because we've seen all these younger quarterbacks, and it's just the state of the NFL right now, Ken, is like, you know, you throw a guy into the fire, the offense isn't fully built out for him. They get a year and a half, then they're benched, then they're traded their offseason second or third year.
And just talk to Anthony Richardson and Bryce Young about it right now. They're both sitting on the bench this weekend. Anthony Richardson just had a bad game, and he's replaced by Joe Flacco. So
yep.
It is what it is. All right, let's talk a little bit about Lamar. I got to a few different stats to toss out here about this, that there was actually very little done in the way of, not very little, but marginal, modest amounts of numbers were thrown at Lamar. So they had 27 four-man rushes on which he got 7.1 yards per play. And then they had 12 other plays on which he averaged 6.7 yards per play with 5+. Now, that was a strange divergence there. 7 plays for 2 yards where they got 0.3 yards per play with 5, including 2 sacks. But then they had 5 plays for 80 yards where they rushed 6 for 16 yards each. small sample sizes, I just throw them together as you know, five plus blitzes, the way a lot of people think about it. And you get a pretty reasonable number that there wasn't a big difference between four, five, or six. But I will say this, it's just way more in the way of set and chip blockers than you would expect for that situation.
Yeah. And to me, I think that with the way that the Ravens operate, you want to be able to put together enough on the offensive side of the ball to where you, I don't know if bait is the right word, but you want to be able to just have this defense be so on their toes that they don't know what's coming. So when you're talking about rushing guys or dropping guys back, it's that you mentioned the option game or whatever between, you know, Lamar and Derrick Henry and being able to keep defenses on their toes, the play action game thrown in there too. Well, if you're rushing all these guys, Lamar has been very adept at beating the blitz, you know, taking the short stuff, mm-hmm. making sure that, you know, he's not holding the ball for too long. He's been very good at that. If you want to drop guys back and not send those guys, well, you can either hand the ball off or they can have stuff develop deeper. So to me, I think that the balance of this offense has been a lot better this season. You know, you mentioned 2019 also. It's just different where, like, the Ravens 2019 offense would run that ball and, you know, they'd hold the ball for 9, 10, 11 minutes a drive mm-hmm. and just take your soul. Whereas yeah. we talked about the offense this year and the Todd Monken is, okay, well, you can go 8 plays, 93 yards in 3 minutes and 50 seconds and score a touchdown. It's just different. It's worked both ways. But I think the way that you operate, especially when it comes to personnel defensively trying to stop it, is a little different.
Right. The 2019 team, to be fair, had a defense that really helped them out a fair amount with some good short fields. So you had that. You had. I'm not saying there weren't other advantages besides the yeah. offensive line that team had, but that team certainly had a freaking great offensive line that we don't oh, yeah. really respect as much as some of the other Ravens units. I want to go quickly through the opportunity set Lamar had, because this was one of the points I made early, but they had only 10 ample time and space opportunities, 26%, which, by the way, is not terrible. But you compare that to the other side, which is the pressure events, 44% in this game, which is horrible in yeah. terms of the relative pressure to ATS rate. Again, the edge rushers did a great job of getting home for the Browns, unfortunately, and so did some of their odd man blitzes, their off ball blitzes. 11.4 yards per play when he had ATS. It was only 10 plays, but that was good. When he got the ball out quickly, which is only 31% of the time, it's a little bit low. Typically, when pressure is higher, ball out quick rate also goes up to kind of mirror it. So you don't, you know, the you're making use of the fact that with your hot reads and whatnot, that they're coming after you. He went 10 of 12 for 100 yards on that. That's 8.3 yards per play. Very good there as well. That 6 might be normal. And then the 17 pressure rates, he was a little bit underperformed on that. All the sacks were there, not necessarily obviously, but they were all there at 2.9 yards per play. And about 3.5 might be what I'd want in terms of average. So the Browns did a good job of converting their pressures into good outcomes in that game. They didn't do a good job of converting their ATS and BOQ. And Lamar is still out through his opportunity set by about 46 yards in this game, or about 1.2 yards per play. So a good game from that perspective. I really lean on that more, the tiered perspective, when we're talking about the defense, because the defense is the pass rush is allowing a opportunity set which is a little bit better than it was in last year. And when I say a little bit better, it's probably about 100 yards better overall, maybe 120 yards by now. But the big loss has been in how they play that opportunity set on the back end, and that's been about 500 yards. So it's you know, I know people want to see more pass rush, and they go, "No, you don't understand, because pass rush complements that." Well, of course, that's what I'm trying to do here. Is I'm trying to separate these things into tiers of pressure they actually get. So, anyway,
yeah, for me, I think that, you know, with Lamar, I think it'd be a very bad Lamar game if he didn't outperform the expected in this, because he's so good at doing it. But there's only so much that the guy can do. And I yep. think what Cleveland was doing, and you kind of compare this to what Baltimore did last season, was they won quickly. Especially, you know, we've mentioned Falele had a rough game. Miles Garrett got home. Okoronkwo, I think, had one of those sacks, if I'm not mistaken. But they got to Lamar in a hurry. And so when they got those quick pressures, Lamar's numbers and just the performance obviously suffered from that in multiple different ways. So, you know, it's one thing if, like, you're able to generate a pressure and Lamar's been back there for a second or two, but when you automatically want a rep at the snap, I mean, it's hard even for, you know, Lamar, who's such a good escape artist and can make so many quick throws on a dime and just immediately to be able to escape that or make positive plays. He does it so often, but, you know, he's not unfortunately invincible. And when it comes down to that, he needs help. And in this game, with the offensive line playing the way that they did and them struggling the way they did, he tried, but certainly led to some tough throws and just some plays that, you know, you wish you could have back, especially from an offensive line perspective, because, you know, the Browns are getting home pretty often.
Yeah, I agree. The fast pressure point is a really good one because a lot of the slow pressure that has been given up by Stanley in particular over the years has been Lamar's very effective at taking bump pressure or proximity pressure from that side and making a play out of it. Of course, all of this changes so dramatically if that 50-yard ball is caught. Yes. Because it's one pass, but it jumps everything by about a yard and a quarter in terms of all of your results across the field. So it's a small sample size still. He was effective, but he would have gone from 46 over to basically 100 over, 96 over, I guess we'd say, if that 50-yard ball is caught and he's down right at that point.
Yeah.
So, all right. One other thing I want to talk about in terms of scheme is they did not really use Ricard very much in this game, 11 times. I think, again, a matter of a lot of game script, of not being in as good opportunities to run the football on first and second down when they did have him in there a fair amount. And Browns were crowding the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. And I think that at this point with Patrick Ricard, you're going to want him in certain situations, but this isn't a situation ever where he's going to have this massive amount of snap share. And plus, obviously, when you're trying to come back late in the game and it's maybe a game where you got to throw a little more, he's not going to be on the field. He ran a route a couple of weeks ago. Was it last week or a couple of weeks ago? Ran
Tampa a route. Bay had the drop. Yeah.
Yeah, he dropped the ball there. Obviously, that was more of a Greg Roman staple when it came to that. But again, you want to be able to use your heavy personnel effectively, but part of that, especially in games when you're trying to come back with that, is you want to sell the threat of the run, even when you're not running the ball, and Patrick Ricard certainly does that. But if he is on the field at the expense of someone else who can help you in the passing game a little bit more, you know, you take him out. And so I wasn't shocked with the usage from Ricard with the way that this game went. I think game flow dictated pretty well, you know, what his role was.
All right, outstanding. Kevin, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can find your show or communicate with you online.
Yeah, absolutely. Always appreciate you having me, Ken. You can find me over on the Locked On Ravens podcast. So 5 days a week plus more, we have that daily Ravens coverage for you. So in video form on YouTube, you can hit that like and subscribe button. In audio form, any break at your podcast, you can follow along and subscribe over there as well. I also write over at the Ravens Wire, do some work over at Bleacher Report, also on the Ryan Ripken Show. And then on social media, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ChaosShaker34.
All right. Very good. A man of many jobs right now. I've forgotten how spread out tentacled you've become in the current world. So other folks out there, if you have an idea for a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter, and I want to hear from you. Please make use of hashtag film study mailbag. Like and subscribe again on your podcast app. And always, if you can, point this podcast out to a friend who doesn't know about it. We always appreciate the word of mouth advertising. Kevin, thanks again for coming on.
Always appreciate you, Ken. Thanks so much.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.